prevent and revert heart disease. This actually is only one of several. I've given this lecture under lots of other names: kale and coronary disease and plant-based nutrition. This is probably the one that's most descriptive, but that kind of prompts two questions. What in the world is coronary disease and what is plant-based nutrition? So I know most of you know coronary disease is one of the most, probably the most common, well, certainly the most common heart disease and the most common medical problem in our country. And it's this process where fatty materials accumulate on the inner linings of blood vessels by this thing we call atherosclerosis or arteriosclerosis, which can result in narrowing or complete blockage of the blood vessels. It goes by a lot of other names. Don't be confused. It's still the same disease, regardless of what it's called. We just change the names to confuse people every so often. But how about what's plant-based nutrition? It's a little more difficult. I hate to call it a diet. It's really a lifestyle change based on and a lot of others, which focuses on preventing or reversing this process by restoring what's called endothelial function. We'll talk about that in a bit, of blood vessels, through the ingestion of low-fat, non-processed whole plant foods. That's going to be the key. Now, I know the typical American response when we talk about nutrition is this young man says, when am I going to be healthy enough to skip eating vegetables? Of course, the easy answer is never, but we'll talk about that in a little more detail. Now, how do you know that this plant-based nutrition works or that it can prevent or reverse heart disease? I would say don't believe it because I say it, because if you talk to my kids or my wife, they'll tell you I've been wrong multiple times before. But what I'm going to try and do is make what I would call a cumulative case argument, where the conclusion is not based just on one single argument, but the added effects of multiple pieces of evidence. More like a trial, if you will, that the standard American diet is going to be on trial. You're going to be the jury. I'll be the prosecuting attorney. I'm going to present evidence or witnesses that I believe that the standard American diet is guilty of being the primary cause of this epidemic we have of coronary artery disease here in America. And furthermore, that this plant-based nutrition, low-fat, non-processed whole plant foods, is able to stop or reverse this process. Now, one little anecdote before we get started here. This is the Statue of David that's pretty famous. I'm sure you've seen this before. It's by Michelangelo. It's in Florence, Italy. What you probably don't know is that it was recently on a six-month tour of America and exposed to the standard American diet. And the results from that exposure is not pretty, okay? That's kind of before and after being exposed to the American diet. Okay, so we'll disregard that. That's the first of three little white lies that we're gonna have. So let's go ahead, start our first bit of evidence, our witnesses, if you will. If you look at various cultures throughout the United States, the farmers of rural China, the Papua Highlanders in what used to be called New Guinea, inhabitants of Central Africa, the Tarahumara Indians in Mexico, they have two things in common. They eat no meat or processed foods, all fruits and vegetables. And two, they have no coronary disease, none. Now you might think, gee, you know, it's the most common medical problem in our country and they have no coronary disease. There's got to be something to that. Now, correlation does not prove causation, but again, it should give you, make you stop and think about things a bit. So let's go into World War II. There's some examples there. They did autopsies on a lot of people who had died in concentration camps. And what they found was no coronary disease. Now, I don't say that so that you, I don't expect you to undergo the sorts of problems or the diets that they went through. But we sometimes think this process is irreversible. And I can't believe that some of these people didn't have coronary disease, yet we didn't find any. So I think in the early stages, it can be entirely reversible. Now this slide shows the mortality rate from circulation diseases in Norway from the 20s out to the 40s. And, you know, it was gradually increasing in this sort of line. And then suddenly in 1940, there was a sudden decrease in mortality. What happened in Norway in 1940? In 1940, it was invaded by the Nazis. And what do? They take all their animals to feed the troops. So Norwegians became semi-vegetarian, if you will. Now, they had a little bit of fish from the sea, but they were essentially vegetarian until 1945. My troops come back, they restore their farm animals, et cetera, and the death rate goes up once again. Again, doesn't prove it, but it certainly should give you some cause of, wow, despite all the rigors and things of the stress, the death rate actually decreased when they weren't eating meat. Now this plane was the type of plane that transported Dr. Esselstyn to Vietnam. You can look at Vietnam data, we're gonna look at Korean War data. And autopsies from American soldiers who died there, they found that almost 80% of them already had visible fatty streaks in their blood vessels. This process we call atherosclerosis. Now their average age was 22. They weren't all diabetic or had high cholesterol or family history, but yet despite that, in common, the standard American diet. Now you might say, well, it's just the stress of war, et cetera, et cetera. You look at the Asian soldiers, almost clear blood vessels. This was something that was unique to our soldiers, the American soldiers, because of our diet. Now there was another study in 1999, reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association, prevalence and extent of atherosclerosis in young adults. They looked at autopsies, almost 3,000 autopsies of 15 to 34 year olds who died from some other process, accidents, homicides, suicides, et cetera. They looked at three blood vessels, the thoracic aorta, the aorta in the chest, that's the biggest blood vessel, and the abdomen, and one of the three blood vessels in the heart, the right coronary artery. What did they find? Everybody had this process in the abdominal aorta, all but two of them in the thoracic aorta. Now, if you look in that right coronary artery in the heart, 60% of the youngest group, 80% of the males, 70% of females in the 30 to the 34 year group had this process already started. Again, what do they have in common? Their diets. And you can go even younger. This was a study back in the late 80s, early 90s. These are 10 to 14 year olds, middle school children. 50% had these foam cells, but 8% of them had these larger in transition to actual plaques, the sort of thing we see in adults with clinical disease. So these are middle schoolers. They had a group of 25, two of them would have these plaques already. So this process starts at a very young age. And again, they didn't all have risk factors, but they did eat the same stuff, which prompted Dr. Kuhler, a pathologist, to say that all males 65 years and older and all females 70 years and older who have been exposed to the standard American diet, traditional Western diet, have cardiovascular disease. And I suspect that we have some males over 65 and females over 70 today watching this. You've got coronary disease, whether you know it or not. Now, this slide looks complicated. It really isn't. It graphs two different things. We've got the pink and the green. The pink is the percentage of deaths from a particular country, and there are 12 countries down below. This tracks 12 different countries, starting with Hungary, United States, Belgium, et cetera. So 12 countries, the pink is the percentage of death rates in that country from either heart disease or cancer. The green is what they eat, the percentage of calories that country takes in from unrefined plant food. So you can see in Hungary, 90% pink, 90% of those people die from heart disease or cancer. And they only take in 10% of their calories from unrefined plant food. There's an almost exact one-to-one inverse correlation between those two. So if you want to die from heart disease or cancer, like they do in Hungary and 80% in the United States, don't take in many unrefined plant foods. If you want not to die from that, take in mostly unrefined plant foods. And if you're like in the US and Hungary, if you're not eating unrefined plant foods, what are you eating? You're eating meats or processed foods. So I think this isn't just one doctor, one hospital, one state, one country. This is over 12 countries. This to me is very compelling data that there's a correlation between what you eat and what you die from. Now the good looking guy on the left happens to be Dr. Bob Vogel, when he was at Maryland, and he published this study, The Effects of a Single High-Fat Meal on Endothelial Function Healthy Subjects. It's also known as a brachial artery ischemic test. But he talks about endothelial function. So now what we're going to address, what in the world is endothelial function? Every blood in our bodies is composed of various layers, but particularly in the arteries, the inner lining, that's what we're most interested in. It's called the endothelium. It's very thin. It's one cell thick, microscopic, but it's very, very important because it does something very important. It produces a chemical called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide does a lot of good things to the blood vessel walls. It dilates the blood vessel, first of all. So when you need more blood flow, it can do. It prevents things like smooth muscle cells from going where they shouldn't be. It prevents stickiness of platelets and things that can cause clots. Prevents white blood cells, this inflammation, from occurring. So it does a lot of important things. So what in the world is this test, the brachial artery ischemic test? So what you can do is you can induce ischemia, lack of oxygen, by putting a blood pressure cuff, turning it up very high around the arm. Look at this brachial artery, which is the artery on the inside, just opposite your elbow. And you can measure. What happens is when you pump up the cuff so you get no blood flow through, that produces what we call ischemia, lack of oxygen, lack of blood flow. And the cells and the blood vessels can sense that, and they want to increase flow. So they rev up the production of nitric oxide, which dilates the blood vessel to try and get more blood flow. And you can measure that, put a little probe on there and see how big it gets. And it usually dilates, you know, X amount. So they did that test after two meals on these subjects, a high fat meal and a just regular meal, same calories, 900 calories, but one was high fat, 50 grams of calories, one was no fat. And they actually got that meal, that high fat meal, from one of those restaurants, you know, with the golden arches. Maybe you've heard of those before, yeah. And they compared them. And what they found was, after the high fat meal, the blood vessel only dilated half as much as it should have. And that would stay there for hours until your next meal. So what they concluded was that a single high fat meal transiently impairs this endothelial function, including the making of this nitric oxide. So any high fat meal can do this and is very reproducible. Here's another study where they looked at olive oil, soybean oil, and palm oil had the same effect on the endothelium. You might say, what, olive oil? Isn't that supposed to be the good oil? I would say good oil is an oxymoron. Some are worse than others, but all oils are the same. They're very high in fat, high calories, 120 calories per tablespoon, and very low in nutrition. And they had the same effect on this test. So all of these oils can affect the blood vessels throughout the body. And not in a good way. Now you've heard this, what are the three most important things in real estate? Location, location, location. Question is, what are the three most important things in atherosclerosis? And I would submit that it's the endothelium, endothelium, endothelium. If you can keep it healthy, you're gonna be well put. But if you have a dysfunctional endothelium that's not working, that's what prompts atherosclerosis. This is the injury hypothesis that everybody agrees with, that you get some endothelium and then you get this inflammatory response and smooth muscle cells and white cells and all these things occur that make this plaque, and it kind of looks like this. You start off with this endothelial dysfunction, then you get these little fibrous clots and platelets starting to clump together. You get cholesterol that leaks out. You get these white cells that turn inflammatory cells, and you end up with this plaque that's full of all this gunk, smooth muscle cells, et cetera, lipid debris, which can impair flow. So everybody agrees with that. What we disagree on is, what's that injury that starts the process? Now, classically, they'll say it's things like hyperlipidemia, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, smoking, et cetera, et cetera. What we're saying is, yeah, those play a role, but the most important thing is diet. That's what starts this process. We see it at a young age in kids, high schoolers, 30-year-olds, et cetera. Now, lately, you've been hearing a lot about what's called a microbiome. It's getting a lot of press. We won't go into it in a lot of detail, but the microbiome is the genetic material of all these microbes, mostly bacteria in our guts, in our large intestine, small intestine, particularly large intestine. Now, you also have fungi, protozoan, et cetera, but it's the bacteria that live inside the body. And we always kind of thought they were just there, not doing much. we find out that that's not true. It really plays a big role in our bodies. For example, the feed on choline and carnitine. These are nutrients in red meats, egg yolks, high-fat dairy products, etc. And as they feed, they produce this chemical called TMA, trimethylamine. The liver oxidizes that to trimethylamine oxide, and that can increase your chances of heart disease by at least 50%. You can double the risk of heart strokes, heart attacks, strokes, etc. just by that, and it depends on what you feed your bacteria. This shows it in a similar graphic way. The carnitine and choline from red meats, egg yolks, you know, things like butter, milk, etc., produce the trimethylamine oxide, and then increasing clots and atherosclerosis. Now, one way to lower the production of that, Dr. Hazen, who's at the Cleveland Clinic, says, is by changing your diet. You, for example, use a Mediterranean diet, it lowers trimethylamine oxide production and decreases your risk of coronary disease. This high-fat, high-sugar diet that we have appears to affect these microorganisms and is partly responsible for some of this inflammatory disease that we have, like inflammatory bowel disease, even some cancers. Short-chain fats, and there are several types, actually suppress inflammation and cancer. And the amount of that that's produced depends on what type of gut flora, what kind of bacteria you have, and the type that thrives on fiber, which only occurs in vegetables. You produce more of these short-chain fatty acids that help decrease your risk of inflammation and cancer. Whereas other things, secondary bile acids, produce carcinogenesis, that is the production of cancers. And those are the sort of things that increase with animal-based diets. I'm going to give you just one little example of this microbiome magic, for example. And this is from Dr. Bolsiewicz. He's written a book, The Plant-Fed Gut, if you're interested. They call him Dr. B because Bolsiewicz is even worse than Tegmeyer, I think. Here's the example that he shows. You take mice that are bred not to have a microbiome, okay? So they have no germs, no bacteria in their guts. Divide them into three groups. And then you transfer microbiota into each mouth from three different types of human donors: normal-sized people, obese people, and underweight people. Okay, so you put that in their guts, and then you feed them. Same diet, exact same number of calories each mouse gets. Okay, so what do you think happened? What happens is you get three different phenotypes of mice, either normal sized, obese, or underweight, just depending on what type of bacteria they have in their guts. Same diet, same calories, three different types of mice. And that's the sort of thing that we're finding out with the microbiome that it has. Now, calories are important, don't get me wrong, but it's not just calories in, calories out like we thought when I started medical school. Much, much more complicated than that. Now let's go back to our heart problems again. This is what a diseased blood vessel on the right-hand side and a normal blood vessel in the heart looks like. Okay, the one on the right is almost completely blocked with this atherosclerosis process, if you will. And a true or false question I usually ask: most heart attacks occur in arteries that are at least 70% blocked. True or false? Most people would say true. As it turns out, that's not quite the way it works. This is the way a heart attack occurs. You have a plaque, and you get all this inflammation in this plaque from this process, all these what are called metalloproteinases, things that are produced by this plaque, and it gets a fibrous cap, this white thing, that's very, very, very thin, almost cobweb-like. And it gets so thin, it's prone to what we call a dissection or a tear. And that can expose all this gunk that's in that plaque. A clot starts to form. If it gets big enough, it blocks off the blood flow altogether through that blood vessel. And the part of the muscle where that blood vessel goes, if that clot stays there long enough, dies. And that's what we call a heart attack. And that's how it occurs. And probably 50, maybe 80% of heart attacks occur in blood vessels with less than 50% narrowing. Now, why is that? Well, for one reason, there are a lot more lesions less than 50%. But we also find that if it's less than 50% blocked, it won't produce any symptoms, what we call angina, chest pain, or abnormal tests. You can have a 40%, 50% narrowed blood vessel that you have no symptoms. You do a stress test, it's entirely normal. I tell you, gee, things look fine. And yet it can still be 50% blocked off and you could still be at risk of heart attacks. Now, this is a blood vessel. And this is a picture of what a heart catheterization looks like. And if I do a heart cath here, and I tell you, gee, that blood vessel looks fine. But if we do a special test called an intravascular ultrasound, we put a little tiny wire probe right in the blood vessel. What the probe looks like, it's right here. And this is the blood vessel that I'm showing on this side over here. It's about 3 millimeters in size, nice size. I would have told you if I did your heart catheterization and showed you that blood vessel, I'd say, gee, things look fine. But as it turns out, this is what's the truth. The blood vessel is actually all the way around here. And this crescent shaped material here is all plaque. That blood vessel is 40% narrowed. Yet I would have told you from the heart catheterization that things look fine. So even we cardiologists, we get sometimes mistaken, if you will. Now, does everyone who has this coronary disease, this atherosclerosis, develop symptoms? No. Not everybody does. You know, does everyone who plays the lottery win the jackpot? No. Some people are more fortunate. Some people are less fortunate. That's the way things go. The problem is we can't determine when symptoms will appear. The first symptom could be chest pain, angina, a heart attack, or it could be sudden death. That's the problem. Sometimes you don't get a second chance. So I tell my patients each day before you eat each meal, you have to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Or as Dirty Harry said, you know, Clint Eastwood back in 71, well, do you punk? Now, how do we treat coronary disease traditionally? We optimize risk factors, we add drugs if we need to, and if need be, we do what's called mechanical treatment, stents, bypass, et cetera. So the question I would ask you, which one of these treatments cures this process, this disease? And I think you know the answer. None of them cures it. These are all fancy, expensive band-aids. Now, if you're having a heart attack, you need a heart cath. Okay, don't get me wrong. But let's not kid ourselves that we can cure it with this process. Dr. Morrison says nothing, not statins, not angiotensin receptor blockers, not beta blockers, most assuredly neither bare metal stents, nor drug-eluting stents, nor bypass grafts. None of those constitutes either a cure for coronary disease, nor is it risk-free. Nowadays, we do probably over a million stents each year. We don't do as much bypass, 300,000, 400,000 a year. They all have risks of mortality. Stents, probably less than 1%, but with bypass, 2 or 3%, along with side effects, morbidity, things like kidney problems, strokes, heart attacks, et cetera. So none of these, like your mom says, you don't get something for nothing. And Dr. Favalero, who is called the father of bypass surgery, quoted as saying, I have always emphasized that bypass surgery is only a palliative treatment. The incidence of coronary disease will only be decreased by proper preventative measures. That's from a surgeon. Now, despite this evidence, what's the general health thinking about coronary disease in the medical literature? You know, President Clinton had some heart problems. He had bypass, he had stents put in. This was one of his doctors. He said this was not a result of his lifestyle or diet. Really? It's a chronic condition. We don't have a cure for this condition. Another one said, this kind of disease is progressive. There aren't any cures. Now, to this, my response would be, I think that is a bunch of baloney. Now, Dr. Esselstyn, back in the early 80s, he was a surgeon at the Cleveland Clinic, not a heart surgeon, actually. He was a cancer surgeon, breast, thyroid. He wanted to do a study on diet and cancer. He didn't know if he'd live long enough, so he decided to do it on heart disease. And there are a lot of heart patients at the Cleveland Clinic. So he asked Dr. Shelton, who was the chief of cardiology, give me some participants. 24 people all had severe triple vessel disease, the three major blood vessels in the heart. They all have branches, but I mean, they had narrowings of all three blood vessels. Age 44 to 68, they had multiple problems. They had multiple procedures, bypasses, et cetera, et cetera. Didn't know what to do with them. They gave them. Several actually were actually told, get your affairs in order. There's nothing else we can do. So his goal was just by diet to get their cholesterol, their total cholesterol, to be less than 150, their keep their LDL, the bad cholesterol, the loaded protein, to about 80 or less, just with this diet, lifestyle. Foods he wanted to include: whole grains, not processed, things like legumes and lentils, you know, peas, beans, etc., vegetables, fruits. So all the fruits and vegetables, non-processed grains, have as much as you want. You don't have to count calories, whatever. Foods to avoid, though, was anything that had ever been thought to potentially produce endothelial dysfunction, meant meat, including not just fish, but fowl, turkey, chicken, dairy, eggs, oils, caffeinated coffee, and simple sugars. Simple sugars. So avoid all of those. And then he followed them. He followed them for about 20 years, actually. He reported the results in 5 years and 12 years. We're going to look at the 12-year data. What did he find? After 12 years, total cholesterol was about 145. So that was what he wanted. He wanted 150 or less. Bad cholesterol, 82. He wanted it 80 or less. So that was about right. Triglycerides, 140. Those are pretty good. And that's before stent or before statins. This was just on diet only. Now, they weren't all designed to have heart cath, but about half of them ended up having heart cath at some point. And this is the sort of thing that they found. This was a narrowing of blood vessel descending after 5 years. It's a little better. It's not a lot, but it's probably 10, 15% improved just on the diet. It's another patient with a circumflex blood vessel. That one's probably more like 20% improved. So there is some regression sometimes on some of these plaques. This is a blood vessel on the right-hand side. You can see a plaque right in this area. And after 5 years, almost back to normal, just on diet alone. There was a coworker of Dr. Usselstyn's, Dr. Rao, a fairly young guy in his 40s, no risk factors. And I just bring him out now to look at another heart cath. He started having some chest pain. And everybody was worried. They took the emergency room. He said, you ought to have a heart catheterization done. I said, fine. They did a heart cath. And this is what they found. Blood vessel down the front had this narrowing all the through it. Now, it wasn't in an easy place to do bypass surgery. We didn't have stents back then. We did have just angioplasty. But they thought really probably should not be treated with procedures, but just with, you know, drugs and diet, etc. So he was a little bummed out, but he did know Dr. Usselstyn. And he asked him about his diet. He said, yeah, you'd be a perfect candidate. So he went on this diet. He really didn't take any medicines, and he was the perfect patient. About 3 years later, he started having a little more chest pain again, a little different than before, but everybody was worried. So he said, well, let's do another heart cath. This is what his blood vessel looked like 3 years later on just the diet, almost back to normal. On diet alone, nothing else. And that's the sort of results we see. Let's go back to these 24 patients of Dr. Usselstyn's first study. So 18 of them stayed on the diet, but six of them said, gee, you know, for whatever reason, we just can't do it. He said, fine, just let me follow you, see how you do. Great. And he followed them. And they reported the findings after 12 years. Now, they looked at these patients for the 8 years prior to the study to see if they had any events, coronary events. They had 49 what he called events, things like increasing symptoms, bypass surgery, heart attack, strokes, et cetera, something different. So he followed for 12 years. They had 49 events during the 8 years prior to that. How many events do you think they had in the next 12 years? Now, you know it's going to be good, or else I wouldn't show it to you. In the next 12 years, they had no events. None. Not in the compliant patient. That was one little sheep that fell off the wagon who had it, but no events in the compliant patients. How about the six dropout patients that said they couldn't do it? They had 13 new cardiac events during that 12 years, increasing symptoms, bypass, one died as well too. So this just kind of shows you that there were dramatic changes in these patients with documented coronary disease over that period of time. Now, how does this work? You know, if you don't have a mechanism, we always worried about this. How does restoring endothelial function protect from heart attacks? Well, this is how we think it happens. If you reduce, you know, if you improve endothelial function, you reduce the inflammation. This is a plaque over here on the left-hand side. Now this plaque may improve, but that's not how it works. You see this white part of the plaque, it's called it's kind of a cap, this plaque. And it gets very, very, as I told you, with heart attacks, it gets very, very, very thin. Well, what happens is you restore endothelial function. That fibrous cap gets thicker and thicker and thicker. And whether the plaque regresses or not doesn't matter. If the fibrous cap gets thick enough, it's tough enough, that'll prevent a heart attack. And that's how this process of restoring endothelial function prevents from heart attacks. And how about how does it protect from angina? Because people can start getting improving in angina within 2 weeks of starting this. Well, you can get some plaque regression, as I told you, but that takes months, maybe even years. But if you restore nitric oxide production, that's the key, along with Poiseuille's law, which I'm sure all of you know what Poiseuille's law, right? I didn't either. Okay, this is Poiseuille's law. Poiseuille's law is a formula for the flow through a cylinder. And a blood vessel is just a very, very long cylinder. The important part of this is radius to the fourth power. Because if you double the radius, 2 × 2 × 2 × 2, you get 16 times the flow. So if you do the math, if you can just restore endothelial function, produce nitric oxide, dilate the blood vessel a little bit, 10%. If you can dilate the blood vessel 10%, you get 50% more flow. And that's all you need to get rid of angina. And that's how this process works. Now, people say, well, could it just be placebo? If people want to feel better, sometimes, you know, they just think they're better. Could be, except that we can measure flow nowadays. This was one of the patients. His cholesterol decreased from 260 to 126 in 2 weeks. And this was a stress test they did before treatment and afterwards. And it's color-coded for flow. The orange is the higher flow. So initially, there was lack of flow in this area. After 6 weeks after treatment, just that, flow goes back to normal. Another patient, same thing. Cholesterol goes from 28 down to 137 within just 2 weeks on the diet. Initially, there's lack of flow out here and here. After 6 weeks, flow is almost back to normal. So it's not a placebo effect. We know because we can measure the flow actually improves. So if you compare plant-based nutrition to stents and bypass, there's no mortality from the diet, there's no morbidity from the diet, and the benefits improve over time as opposed to getting worse over time. And patients are empowered with the fact that they're the ones controlling this disease that was once destroying their lives. Now, what are the criticisms? It was a small study. True, it was a small study. I should tell you that some of the people I told you were told to get their affairs in order, there's nothing else we can do. Well, one of those just died in her mid-90s from that. But I tell people it was a small study, but what if it was a patient with stage 4 cancer and you put them on a diet and after 12 years, there was no progression of cancer? You'd be pretty amazed. And that's the same sort of thing that triple vessel disease is. Or how large a study would be significant, because a few years ago, he published another study with 200 patients. He said there was skepticism that this would succeed on a larger group. So they did it with 198 patients, say 200 makes the math easy, 200 volunteers who put them on the diet. They followed them for over 3.5 years. And this was the results they found. Of the 200 patients, as it turns out, about 90% were adherents, stayed on it. About 10% did not stay on it. Okay. Again, it makes the calculations easy. And how many adverse cardiac events were in the patients who stayed on the diet, 2 to 4, and the non-adherent, 13. So if you go percentages, in the patients who stayed on the diet for over three and a half years, there was a 1 to 2% risk of adverse cardiac event. Adverse being like a heart attack, needing a bypass, stent, death, that sort of thing. How about in non-adherent patients? 62% had an adverse cardiac event over that 3.7 years. So this was a larger study. Again, not thousands of patients, but hundreds of patients, a couple hundred patients with dramatic, dramatic changes. So his conclusion was the time is right for a controlled trial, but in the meantime, the data sound is strong enough that patients should be informed of this option. So what's the problem? And I'll tell you, it doesn't take a brain surgeon to figure this out. This is data from the USDA. and this is the percentage of people over 20 of obesity and extreme obesity. And these climbing, this is from the 60s, now for 50 years after that into the teens, markedly increasing. This is from the CDC. And they're saying that from adults age 20 and over, there's a 39% are obese. And if you look at how many are just overweight and obese, about 70% are either overweight or obese. Again, it doesn't take a genius to figure this out. You know, anybody ever walk through a Walmart? It's pretty obvious. And this is why. This also is from data. This is data from the USDA of what we take in. This was from the 70s and then over 40 years up into about 2010. What you find is that we're eating more, and it's the bad stuff. So from 1970 out to 2008, 40 years out, we take in about 30% more calories now than we did in 1970. And not only that, it's 50% more fats and oils in the 70s. And if you look at the fruits, the percentage of fruits has decreased. And for vegetables, even though we take in 600 more calories a day, the actual amount of vegetables we take in has decreased. Went from 125 calories to 122 calories. So we're taking in 600 more calories and we're taking in less absolute vegetables. That's the problem. So what's the solution? There's virtually no nutrients in animal-based foods that are not better provided by plants, which Dr. Campbell, who wrote the China study, says. If you look at macronutrients, cholesterol, where's cholesterol from? It's only in meats. It's none in vegetables. Fats, much, much more in meats. Very little in vegetables. Proteins, a little less in vegetables, but not much. But if you look at the micronutrients, are things like antioxidants and phytochemicals that do a lot of good things. They're almost all in just vegetables. There's a little bit in meats, but not much. And that's, there's probably hundreds, if not thousands, of these micronutrients in vegetables. And if you compare animal-based food versus plant-based food has no cholesterol, has few, if any, saturated fats, with the exceptions being avocados and coconuts. Animal-based food has no fiber. It has higher amounts of fats as well as saturated fats, fewer, if any, antioxidants. And it's just recycled plant food. And processing, the more you process food, the less nutritious it is. Generally speaking, processed food has fewer micronutrients, these antioxidants and phytochemicals, higher amounts of more concentrated calories, fats and oils, higher amounts of simple sugars, that is higher glycemic index, and less fiber. But people say to me, yeah, doc, you know, but it's just so radical. This diet is just so radical. And I said, you know what? This is what's radical. What do you call that? And actually, that's the version that's kind of cleaned up. This is really what it looks like. This is radical. And people say, but no meat or oils? Really? Are you kidding me? One of my favorite philosophers is Yoda when he was teaching Luke Skywalker. He says, you must unlearn what you have learned. Or people say, Doc, I just can't do that. And again, Yoda told Luke, always with you, it can't be done. Or my favorite, when patients come in, says, okay, I'll try. And what does Yoda say? No, try not, do or do not. There is no ought. There's no try. It's my best Yoda impersonation. I can't do it very well. My son's really good at it. So it's either you do or you don't. So what do we learn? You want to avoid foods that are caloric rich and processed, otherwise known as crap. Left with what? Plant-based nutrition. So the whole lecture can be summed really in one sentence. Start eating the nutritious stuff and stop eating the crap and the BS. The BS, you know, the bad stuff. Yeah. What do you think of? Yeah, bad stuff. Okay. Now, we'll also just venture off a little bit from coronary disease again. This is The Lancet. This was published in 2015. This was from the World Health Organization. On the carcinogenicity of consumption of red and processed meat, carcinogenicity, the ability to produce cancers. And the World Health Organization considered processed meat as group one carcinogenic to humans, same category as cigarettes and alcohol. They increased stomach cancer as well as prostate cancer. Red meat was group 2A, just under that, probably carcinogenic because of pancreatic and prostate cancer patients. And, you know, processed meats, how many can you name? Sausage, salami, lunch meats, deli meats, bologna, jerk, you know, pepperoni, liverwurst, corn dogs, bacon, fish sticks, spam, goes on and on. Those are all processed meats throughout our culture. And the question I have you ever eaten any? Or even better than that, have you ever fed any to your children or your grandchildren? On the other hand, a diet of fiber, fruits, and vegetables is associated with a reduction in the risk for things like colon cancer. Now, here's a slide from Dr. Usselstyn's that he's given me. Reminds him of a patient he had. Now, there's an untrue assumption that this is a picture of my wife and I, and that's kind of a rumor that's not true at all, because she's not taller than I am. She had her hair in a bun, and I have no clothing at all that looks like anything like that, okay? But reminding him of a patient in his initial group who said, "Doc, I should pay you twice." Is what do you mean, pay me twice? So, well, not only is my heart better, my erectile dysfunction's gone. And it makes, you know, we see that all the time. You know, every organ needs blood flow. What doesn't get proper blood flow doesn't function well. So this is not surprising to us at all. Okay, I'm going to make you a cardiologist here for two case studies real quickly, and then we'll be done. Two studies, patient A, patient B. Patient A, first one, 57-year-old, started having chest pain. No risk factors, none at all, good-looking guy, normal exam, had a stress test, was abnormal. And we did a heart catheterization because his stress test was abnormal. So I'm going to show you what a heart cath looks like. That's the blood vessel on the right-hand side. That's what a cath looks like. Pretty good. It's a little narrowing there. Not terrible, but not bad. This is the pumping chamber. We put a tube right in to see how well it squeezes. It's squeezing normally. Now we're going to look at the blood vessel on the left-hand side. And this is what the blood vessel looks like. And if you'll notice, right in here, it's kind of pinched down, but that's the part of the heart down the front that was abnormal in the stress test. And then we put a stent in. We put this wire right through the blockage. The stent is on top of the wire. We blow up a balloon that stretches open the blood vessel. Then you decrease the balloon. The stent stays there. You take the wire out, and voila, looks pretty good. This is where the narrowing was. Looks great. This is before. This is after, looks much better. So then we do the usual medicines. The question is, what type of diet should you put this guy on? So that's patient A. I want you to remember him. We're going to come back to him, patient A. Pretty straightforward. This is a little more difficult patient. This was a patient of mine back in the 90s, 52 years old, had bad family history. His father died suddenly, started having chest pain. We did a stress test where he had abnormal. I did a heart cath. One blood vessel totally blocked, severe narrowings. And the other one, he had five bypasses put in, two artery bypasses, three vein grafts, and his chest pain went away, okay? So he's fine for 16, 15 years. Now in 2009, he's 68, starts having chest pain again. Did a stress test, very abnormal. In fact, so abnormal, I took him to the cath lab the same day and did a heart cath. This is what his cath looked like. And this is what his blood vessels looked like. So this blood vessel, very severe. This one's totally blocked off, should come down here, doesn't. There's a narrowing in this blood vessel, should be branched down here, that's totally blocked off. This is coming, this blood vessel is coming from the right-hand side. This is from the left-hand side. And you can see these faint visuals. Those blood vessels are coming from the right-hand blood vessel, so we know that one's totally blocked off. So it's totally blocked, has these little feeder vessels we call collaterals that fill it, but it looks very, very ratty all the way through it. Severely diseased. Now this is one of his artery bypasses. Looks beautiful. That's the way you want it. Looks perfect. This is another artery bypass, almost blocked off there. Pumping chamber, there's a little bit of damage, not much. So there's a narrowing this branch, narrowing here, this is totally blocked off. Here's another bypass, totally blocked off. Another bypass, totally blocked off. Fifth one, totally blocked off. So the question is, what do you do now? He's got, of his own natural blood vessels, two are totally blocked off. The third one has total blockage of two branches. Of his five bypasses, four blocked off, one is open. So now what? Should he repeat bypass surgery? Increase his medical treatment, get more medicines, put him on plant-based nutrition? The question is, what would you do if you were in that situation? Well, I told him, you know, the data would say, or the studies and the experts would say, you should repeat bypass surgery. The doc, you know, I'm just not going to have bypass surgery again. I just don't want to go through. I said, you know what? You'd be a perfect patient for this diet treatment, this lifestyle change. So he chose plant-based nutrition, started on over 10 years ago. He lost 20 pounds. He cut back on his medications. His diabetes got better. His cholesterol was 120. This again was before statins. His LDL is 51. I would harbor to bet that that's better than anybody out listening to this lecture today. And his chest pain was gone. Walked 3 miles a day. So luckily, who made the right decision? He did, not his cardiologist, which was me, because I would have recommended surgery back then. Now, what do patients want? I know what they want. They want a pill for this disease that's 100% effective, has no side effects, is inexpensive, and they prefer free, actually. Easy to swallow, effective immediately, doesn't require any effort on their part whatsoever. And if possible, depending on whether it's a man or a woman, either make you look 10 yards younger or hit a golf ball 10 yards further. What's the problem is? We don't have any like that, do we? If you can find a pill like that, let me know, because we can make a lot of money together. Now here's the second little disclaimer, a little white lie that I had told you before. I told you that patient A was good looking. Actually, it's not true. He's mediocre on a good day. But everything else is factual about that case. And patient A that we looked at, that was me. You know, smart guy, right? Cardiologist, doing all the right things. I had this prostate on both sides of the cath table. I've been on both sides of the stents. So I had a stent put in at that point. And I've been on this lifestyle change, this diet, since 2007. Now, why do people say, why do you continue on it? You know, it's kind of a nuisance, you know? I said, you know what? I've got a lot of reasons. Now, I'll bet you have some of the very same reasons, but I've got a bunch of reasons, and I'm going to show you two of them right now. And here's two of the reasons why I've stayed on it. Yeah, my twin granddaughters. And any of you grandparents out there, they've gotten bigger and older. I've got about 1,000 of these pictures, so hold on to your seats here for a little bit. So this is why I stay on it, and they graduated from college as well, too. I forgot about that one. So that's why I stay on it. And I'll bet you have just as good a reason as I do. Now, there are some caveats. You know, caveat emptor, buyer beware. You have to be aware of a few things. Challenging in our society. My son lives in the People's Republic of California, and they have a vegetarian restaurant every corner. Not so much down here in Tuscarawas County. You know, down here in Tuscarawas County, if you go into a restaurant, you'll see that under beverages, you'll find gravy. So it does require a little effort and planning. It does not make you live forever. You will be considered unique, and actually your friends will just say you're weird. It can be done. There are some side effects, okay? These are the side effects you're going to watch. Your cholesterol is going to decrease. Your blood pressure is going to decrease. You'll probably feel better. You'll probably lose weight. You'll require less medicine. You'll need to buy new clothes, and almost certainly your toilet paper costs will increase. Okay? Those are the side effects you can anticipate. But I believe that we, the medical profession, need to inform patients of these options, and I don't think we do a very good job of that. People do with them is up to them, but we need to give them the right data and let them decide what to do. So this is where you come in. A number of years ago, we started the Canton Project. Aideen Keller, who's a rehab nurse, and I, usually we meet monthly. We haven't been meeting. We do have Zoom. If you want to get a hold of Aideen, I think she's giving a lecture next week. She gives the how you do it part. I do the why part, and she does the how you do it. But you can also email her at aideen.keller, like Helen Keller, aideen.keller at altman.com. And if you want to Zoom, you can Zoom in some of our meetings as well, too, until we start meeting back again. And if you're worried, by the way, for those of you who have weight loss issues or questions, And she gave me the ability to show you this. This is one of our patients. We have more problems with patients maintaining their weight. I eat four times a day to keep my calories up, to keep my weight on. But this is one of our patients. Shows a before picture and an after picture. She lost over 120 pounds just on this. You eat as much as you want to. You eat until you're full. If you're interested, Dr. Esselstyn has a book out, Prevent Reverse Heart Disease. His wife and daughter also have a cookbook, Prevent Reverse Heart Disease cookbook. You can go to his website at dresselstyn.com as well, too, if you're interested. There are a lot of other people. There's lots of other data. That's the important part. I'm going to show you just two other quotes, and then we'll open questions. This is Dr. Kim Williams. He's a past president of the American College of Cardiology. And, excuse me. He always thought he would be known as the first African-American president of the American College of Cardiology. He's not. He is, however, known as the first vegan president of the American College. And what he would say to you is, I don't mind dying. I just don't want it to be my own fault. Sounds reasonable. One last quote from Dr. Esselstyn. He's famous for saying that coronary artery disease is a toothless paper tiger that need never exist. And if it does exist, it need never, ever progress. I've only added one thing. It's your choice